shit.
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
But fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof it the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have. And, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not light. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGinnis in his life.
Welcome along to our Saturday panel. It is the eve of the 2019 All-Ireland Hurling Final. Tipperary and Kilkenny about to do battle once again. And we're joined in the studio by eight-time All-Ireland winner Taggy Fogarty. Doughty Regan celebrating 25 years since that famous day with Offaly. And Ryan O'Dwyer, who is... well placed to talk about Tipperary. Current player, just fresh off the pitch out in Kilmacud at the Sevens.
Yeah. Yes, I'm fairly tired now, to be honest. Yeah, it's tough going out there. Well, at least I've won All Ireland Sevens title.
Wow.
So yeah, I won two of them, so lads, I have that all.
How competitive is the Kilmacud Sevens?
It's usually very competitive. The numbers are down this year.
Yeah, I'd heard alright, it's a bit more of a struggle to get the top teams and the top players to play.
Yeah, because if we could organise a county boards, maybe give it a week after All Ireland, but look, it's easier said than done. But yeah, a lot of tip clubs pulled out after the semi final because club championship's run is fixed for next weekend. I think we had 9 Limerick clubs, but after they got bet in the semi final, they all pulled out. So yeah, it's not as easy as it was, but there's 16 teams there this year. So I think that's the smallest number we've had. So.
Good buzz out there.
Yeah, I was glad to get out of it because I'm fairly tired. But I'll go back out now. It's a good bit of crack out there.
53106 is the text number. We're live on all our social channels, offtheball.com, if anybody has any comments to make. If you're on your way up maybe for the match, getting and making a weekend out of it, do let us know. What's the pre-match routine in Kilkenny then, the day before, Taggy?
Avoid everyone, really, yeah.
What time would the players get together?
Players get together Sunday morning. To meet up outside Langton's, put the gear on the bus, put the suits on the buses, and just head up as the normal.
And would you meet up on Saturday?
No, wouldn't meet up on Saturday. So team day on Friday night, and Gordy will go through obviously certain tactics and go through the players, and we have a serious team talk. And that's where Gordy does his talking. Really, he does it on Friday night. He doesn't really do it on the Sunday. He kind of lets the players kind of take over the dressing room themselves. So then Saturday,
is he the only person that talks on Friday night?
Yeah, he'd be the only person that talks. Yeah, he throws out to the players if anyone wants to say anything, but really it's kind of done during the week. They'll have their meeting maybe on last Monday and stuff like that, so all the players would have talking already. So yeah, it's mainly Brian. And then Saturday it's about punching the day, and it's about your own routine, whether you sleep in, whether you get up, whether you go to match. Mine was get up, have the breakfast, and I'd go for kind of a walk, just clear the head, and I'd probably watch a film in the afternoon. And I used to watch the first 20 minutes of up for the match. You know, I just get the old vibe of what's going on, a bit of crack, and go to sleep then after that. Yeah, so sometimes it'd be hard to get to sleep. But
And you're watching up for the match with the hand on the controller the whole time in case they start doing some tactical analysis?
In case something is actually said, you would be actually kind of, I'll turn it off now because I can't be listening to that. Or, if, you know, a certain tactic, as you said, something could be said. It just could get into your head. Anything, the smallest thing, and especially on Saturday if you're going down the town for, you know, get the paper or milk or anything, the smallest thing is that could say to you. You get into your head.
Did that happen?
What did I mean
by
that?
Had you experiences with that?
I didn't as such, no, because I just avoided people. And for the whole week, the safest place it can be, I feel, for that whole week and the whole 3 weeks building up, is actually in the dressing room, because that's where everyone is going for the same thing. There's no one kind of asking you questions. There's no one kind of pulling out of you, you know, because lads are mad to talk to you, you know, and that's understandable. Your own club men are mad to see what's going on and how you're feeling, but that's draining, you know, and you kind of learn that with time as well. It's draining. If you keep talking about the match, it can be actually draining even before it starts. So the dressing room, in training with the boys, that's where you want to be.
The travelling up on the day of the game is obviously a winning formula for Kilkenny, and all the players are well used to that routine. Did any part of you ever want to go up on a Saturday to not have to think about it, just go and stay in a hotel and just be amongst yourselves?
No, for me, no. And I think every Kilkenny player was the same. I think they wanted to just travel up in the bus. It was an hour and a half on a bus. Not too bad anyway. We had the escort into the Crown Plaza Hotel. I think it's nice to sleep in your own bed and be at home with your own family and stuff, or your own friends, wherever you live at home. It's nice to be in your own routine. I feel if you can sort, if you go to a hotel, it can be very stuffy. You're not in your same bed, you're not in the same routine. So I think it's important to stay at home on a Saturday night. And the bus up is even, it's a gallery. We have all of our own seats and everything. You know, I sit beside Derek Ling, PJ Ryan, Mick Cavanagh's behind us, and we'd be skitting and laughing the whole way up, you know. And then.
No headphones on
at the time, no, not even phones or anything like that, hardly. And we used to sit kind of in front of the toilet because myself and Derek had the nicest seats for the leg room. And all the ways we'd be coming down, Henry come down around Nace for a little stretch, and he'd be talking a bit of crack and the weather and the boots, what boots you're wearing, and things like that. And everyone used to go, you'd be well hydrated, so you meet all the lads, you get a little chat over every one of them going up in the bus. So yeah, it's about routine, I think, really, you know.
That Friday night speech from Cody, was it quite repetitive over the years? Was it the same focus on tactics, focus on little parts of the game, or was it ever quite an emotional speech?
It depends what's going on at the time, really. It depends what's going on with that team. Sometimes the team was named, and I was named on it, and I just switch off. Because I'm happy enough, right, I'm named, right. That's me done for the night, you know, that kind of way. But he'd go through the whole team, he'd go on certain tactics that we would have talked to during the week, but just to refresh the lads in their heads as well. And whatever's going on with that team then, or whatever's happened through the year, like, say in 2007, we had James McGarry, you know, the death of his wife. You know, that was a great motivational factor for us. You know, 2011 was the revenge of 2010. So there's always maybe something you always have to talk about. And Cody would relate to that as well. And he talked about tradition, the honour of wearing the jersey in our Ireland final day, the culture in Kilkenny, your family, you know. And he just brings it down to kind of an honest level. No real hairy-fairy stuff. He just brings it down to a real honest level about hurling and the GAA and what it's all about. And go out and do your best, you know.
Daithi, you're going to be on the pitch at halftime in Croke Park tomorrow?
Yeah, 25 years, but like, listen to Taggy there, not a lot changes over the years, to be honest with you.
What's your memories of that weekend in 94?
I suppose on the Friday, I drove down to Ballyhadrine. My father was from Ballyhadrine, and as kids, we used to go down there.
Right.
I don't know why, because it's a god awful place.
What?
I don't mean that. But it'd be a huge thing for us, even today. Like, my father's dead 12 years, and the night before he died, you know, I even said to him, like, the kids, I'll always bring my children down, because we were there as kids, and I actually very nearly went in the 80s. But yeah, it's a huge part, which I'm a huge Roscommon supporter, as you probably guess.
Yeah.
But actually, on the Friday, 2 days before the game, I just got into my head on the Friday morning to drive down to Ballyhadrine. Like, what's left of the home place there is a place called Brusna, about 2.5 miles outside of Ballyhadrine. There's nothing there. The old scullery, and it was an old thatched cottage. There's nothing, just kind of
the remnants side, though, not
the Roscommon side. Yeah, but the remnants of the house is there. And for some reason, 2 days before the game, I just got into my head, nothing could stop me, but I just had to go down. And to do what was just sit there, just sit in the wall, like where the scullery was. And that was literally it. And spent about a half an hour. And his eldest brother was retired back from England, and I went to visit him. His wife, God be good to her, was very, very ill with cancer and died 3 weeks afterwards. And I spent a bit of time with them. So my mum was telling me afterwards, Dad rung back from work that day and asked where I was. And she went, I don't know, he's driven to Ballyhadrine. And he was like, you know, what in God's name is he driven there for? Because it wouldn't be on the menu now, drive 85, 90 miles 2 days before the game. But you weren't told that type of thing then. But you'd know yourself, you probably shouldn't have done it. But it's just funny things get in your head. It's like you saying, Taggy, when you get picked, you switch off with everything else. I would have had the same battle in relation to getting picked. It would have been a tight call. And once I did, it was like, nothing else mattered, only I'll do what I think is best for me. So that's what I did. I drove down, and I actually just said to my daughter on the way up, I remember the day 25 years ago, the day before the game, I had lunch with my mother in Burke. She was getting the bus up to Dublin to mind my brother's kids the following day. And Sports Stadium was on Saturday. It was Liam Riley. Riley used to present it. But they had an interview with Gary Kirby on, made during the week, and they chatted to him about it, and they said, what'll it mean to Limerick if you win? And he just spoke about rugby and trying to get young children in Limerick back in 1994 playing hurling, and all the kids will be playing hurling and the whole thing. And I was looking at TV, and I see the next up was Johnny Pilkington been interviewed by a young Ger Canning. Think, oh, turn it up. So they chatted to Pilkington, and they said the same to Johnny. So Johnny, if you win, what'll it mean? And Johnny looked into the camera, and he went, it means there'll be some drinking done for the next 3 months, Ger. They go, why the day before an All-Ireland finally is saying something like that? But it's, yeah, good memories.
That's retreat then back to Ballyhadrine a couple of days before the match. Like, was there a part of you that was looking for a connection? Were you looking for emotion? Because in the modern game and with Kilkenny, there's a lot of taking the emotion out of
it. Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you want to be going on that pitch very aware of what it meant
to everybody?
I did,
but I suppose my take on it was, and I've always done it, and I'm kind of an emotional type of fella that way, would be, you know, as my father, he was a football man. He was a huge football man. We were as kids, we were brought length and breadth to watch Roscommon play football. And it was kind of to tie with him in some way, it really was. And I remember then, years later, because the morning of the game, he dropped me to the square down to get the bus at 10 o'clock and he'd gone out and played 9 holes of golf that morning. And I remember the day I die, all I wanted him to say to me that day, that morning at 10 o'clock when he dropped me off was, I'm proud of you or good luck. And he said nothing. The only thing he said to me was, you can't play it tomorrow, you know. And I remember years later having a pint with him and, you know, I said, I knew why you had to go to Ballyhadreen, but... And I said to him, do you know, I wanted you to say something that morning, but it was the old style. Mm. He said to me, I wanted it, but I didn't know how to. You know what I mean? Just a word. I just wanted a word from him. So wasn't that it made a huge difference to your day. It was a personal kind of thing, you know, that just a word of encouragement to say, I'm proud of you. I suppose your dad, you look up to him and you wanted, and he'd never played hurling kind of thing. So a huge part of it was for him and for where he was from. And to this day, like, Ballyhadreen is a huge, huge, very important part for me. You know, it's your heritage, it's where you're from type of thing. And the kids now are at the age, they don't want to go down. You know, they have their own lives kind of thing. But for me, I was down a couple of weeks ago on the way to Westport. I stopped off and there's not a lot in it, you know, from the point of view of Senec or anything like that. But deep down,
still the meat
huge amount. Yeah. No, but listen, there'll always be a huge part.
Nothing wrong with us?
No, I know that. There'll always be a huge part. Yeah, I would consider it a huge part of our upbringing, Ballyhadreen, yeah.
And what was Eamon Creegan like ahead of that final? I know you've often said he was a quiet man. Around an All-Ireland final, would the emotion get the better of him?
Oh, absolutely not, no. Eamon Creegan was... He appeared to us emotionless, but I guess he wasn't. Everyone has their different personas. But in front of us, I suppose, no. Really interesting cameo was, obviously, he was a great Limerick man and would be considered one of the great hurlers at the time. And in Limerick, they considered him one of their greats. Mm. But Derry O'Donovan was his physical trainer. Derry would have been very close to us. And he would have been kind of the conduit between Creegan and us on a level where we could chat. You know, and we'd kind of always try and get deep into find out his psyche, and we'd be saying, Derry, what's he really like? Because they're pally to this day. But Derry often told me that when we left the dressing room that day, Creegan gave a speech, and everyone was left, and the selectors left, and the only two in the dressing room left were Creegan and Derry, two Limerick men. And Derry took a look at him, and he went, snap out of it. He said, there's two teams going out there today, and you know which one you're with, because the cameras went on him when we won. And he was like, devastated, like, and we were kind of, get over yourself, like, you know, you're with us. But that's the type of man he was. He was a very stoic type of gentleman, and that was it. I mean, the National League was played in October back then, and we played Waterford in the first game, and we were beaten by a cricket score at half time. And Creegan came in and he ate us over our All-Ireland performance. We didn't deserve it, and he only hurled for a few minutes. And if you think that's great, and I remember Martin Hannamy going, you know, is there no pleasing this guy? Get over it, like. We won, get over it. But to him it was the performance. He was a purist, a real purist. And he hated that we had won the way we won, playing rubbish for the bulk of the game and getting over the line. You know, he
which
wanted
is often
to,
just what all yeah, yeah. is in a final.
Well, All-Ireland finals, a lot of them, I know you guys are unique in that you've won them well from well out, but a lot of All-Irelands go to the wire and they're not purists' games. You know, you have to dog them out. But he was a purist, and that's the way he was as a hurler.
Do you think his reaction at the full-time whistle was that frustration of, this team I've dedicated myself to over the past year haven't performed the way I would have wanted on the biggest day? Or was it that you'd
No, it was Limerick. It was Limerick. But I have to say, and I have great respect for the man, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way to him. I never believed that. Many will probably say, yeah, I always believed he played it well. You know, that he didn't want to be seen to be euphoric after the final whistle went. And I never bought into it, because he was in Limerick and he coached him a couple of times, and he wasn't like the flavour of the month down there. They wouldn't have rated him like we would. We'd have rated him the best we ever had. But in Limerick they didn't. And you know the way sometimes you keep it within, but privately you're going, that really showed them. And I always kind of thought that, because he's such a winner. And as a golfer, I've never played with him, but boys would tell me that as a golfer he's so competitive, and that's the way he was in his life. I think privately he was thrilled. You'd have to be as a manager. You know, he brought a team from nowhere to win in All-Ireland. Unless he's cold,
I suppose being from Limerick, he didn't want to rub it in their face. You know,
fair point. Fair point. Yeah,
there is that side as well. Like, yeah, at the moment, like he had to go back down there. He had to live there. He didn't want to be creating enemies by celebrating a Limerick defeat.
Yeah,
was he the perfect character to coach that Offaly team?
Oh, he was. Yeah.
Because if he was emotionless, you weren't, and it was a fairly wild bunch that actually he never got overly carried away with it.
Oh, he was absolutely the right man. I remember I was repping for Beamish and Crawford when he got the job in 93. Limerick or Kilkenny, we'd had marvellous battles with Kilkenny from 89 when I came on, and we had hammered Kilkenny in 89, hammered Kilkenny in 90, 94, 95, and in 91 Dublin beat us, 92 and 3 Kilkenny beat us, 93 they won the All-Ireland and just got over the line against us. John Power, DJ got a penalty with 2 minutes to go. So, like, we knew we had a good side. We'd won 3 minors in 4 years. We'd lost the 3 under-21 correspondent finals. So we knew we were. And our county board deserve great credit, huge credit, because they looked at the bunch and went, there's something here, but we need a disciplinarian with them. So he was the right fit. Mm. There's no doubt he was the right fit, and he was an absolute disciplinarian. Within a year, I was jettisoned off the panel. Roy Mannion was gone off the panel. I was blessed in 94 to be brought back on because I played a couple of good club games. Mannion, he never touched again. And he would have been second to Brian Whelan as the most skillful player in 20 years we had in Offaly. He was that good, and we beseeched the county board behind Cregan's back. We need him. But he crossed him once, and that was it. And like, we couldn't afford to be losing players in Offaly, but that was it. He was a disciplinarian. I remember when I was dropped and I got back on in 94, I never crossed him again for as long as he was there.
That can really go either way. Like, someone comes in and tries to stamp their authority. If there's a backlash from the players, and you've seen it in every sport and recently in the GAA as well, like, if they do try to put their stamp on it, players can kind of put up a resistance against it, and then it all just goes flat. You see,
we needed it at the time, and we knew we needed it.
Yeah.
And it was a different, like, you know, coming from where we were coming from, we were a different kind of bunch. Not saying we were better or any worse than what followed, and teams with strong characters who went, no, we don't want this manager, because we wanted him, and we knew we needed him.
Yeah.
Like, we'd have been very, very quick to turn on ourselves. We actually weren't very quick to turn on other managers. I know the issue with Babs when he went at the time, but, like, I mean, the first people we'd have pointed our fingers at were ourselves.
And that shows a lot of
maturity. We never had a problem doing that, and Whelan would never have been afraid, and I heard all my club with Brian Whelan, never been afraid to point a finger at me or Pilkington or someone else and go, you're acting a B, you know, and in front of everybody. And if he said it, you knew you were. You didn't need to be told. But sometimes when you're told by one of your own players, that was it.
So
we policed ourselves from that point of view, but he oversaw the whole thing. And he was a great man, and we'd all have huge respect for him.
But you were competing as well, Don. You probably knew between yourselves that you had a good quality team. And when you're kind of winning things, if you come in with that attitude, you want to stick together. If you're losing all the time and getting heavy defeats, it can go the other way if you come in with that attitude.
Well, people kind of at times look back and say, oh, ye were a wild bunch and this, that and the other. I mean, we won 4 Leinster Senior Championships, the National League, you know, 2 All-Irelands, lost a couple of All-Irelands. You know, over an 8-year period, it was actually a really successful team. What we didn't have, and Michael Deignan would always say this, what we didn't have was what ye guys had, the ruthlessness to want to win it every year. Like, I don't think many of us may have had it. Some of us may have said, if you won one, it was the celebrations. We carried them on a bit, all right.
Did you have it?
Oh, when I play, well, you see, the difficulty was I had no balance. I had very little balance. So I'd have no problem in tuning into the demands. I mean, you wouldn't have won what you did with Burren Offaly unless you did. Mm. But the difficulty I had was knowing kind of when to stop celebrating, and it would carry on and carry on and carry on. And it cost me an All-Ireland in 98 because we won a Club All-Ireland with Burr, a great Club All-Ireland. And it was a really emotional one because Joe Erdy was captain and his father had died in the stand during the semi-final against Dalo's Clarecastle. Draw, extra time, replay, and we bet Sarsfields in the final. And I was in the best shape playing great hurling and I didn't stop celebrating. And Offaly went down and won the All-Ireland in 98. And Michael Bond came in. Babs was so good to me, recognised I had an issue at the time and I hadn't stopped, you know. And Babs was so helpful to me. He really did and says, you know, I can help you out here. And I didn't want to stop. You know, I didn't know when to stop celebrating. And Michael Bond came in and he was brilliant and he had me down trying to get the best out of me again. And I was getting back into it, but I shouldn't get back in time. and that was it. And then when the panel was got together for the All-Ireland, I wanted to be part of the outer panel. And they did the right thing and they went, no, you know,
you're not part of it.
And that was it. Yeah. So
where were you the day of the final?
I was up in the stand looking at it. And the following morning, I was in Castlebar for a meeting. But I deliberately set a meeting in Castlebar for the Monday, win, lose or draw, because I said, you can't turn and point the fingers. And I was a great fella at that, and everybody else for your failures. This is one that, and I often thought about this, it's something that could have haunted me in life.
Yeah.
You know, missing out on that All-Ireland because of my own fault, because I overindulged for too long. But I parked it straight away and I said to myself, I have to, because this thing can eat you up going forward. And I did, and I parked it. And I never revisited it, ever revisited it, because it could eat away. So I was the author of my own downfall by missing out on that All-Ireland. And the rest of the boys knew it, because they all wanted me there. You know, I'd hurled with them all the way through, and I was good enough, and I'd have been on the team if I minded myself, but I didn't. So I had no one to blame.
Yeah.
So I don't look back in anger, as the song goes, to be honest with you. It was my own fault. I got what I got out of it, and I deserved what I got out of it. And what I missed, I got what I deserved that year as well. So no regrets like that.
I'd imagine you get a good reception tomorrow when you all go out onto the pitch. Do you know if Eamonn Creegan will be there?
No, he's not. He won't be there, no. Unfortunately, we'd have loved if he did, but he's his own man. And that's,
you'd have so many questions from him. It's been so long, probably, since you've spoken to him.
I've met him a few times at a couple of golf outings type of thing, but, you know, he's not an easy man to talk to, and I don't mean that in any disrespect. He's a wonderful man, and we have just... Our memories of him are a man who brought us to the high altar of hurling, and we're just so grateful for him. Would we have got there without him? I don't know, would we, to be honest with you? It's arguable we wouldn't have without him.
We'll enjoy it tomorrow.
We will,
I'm sure you'll have a good day and a good evening. Ryan, you were part of the tip squad when Liam Sheedy first came in.
Yeah, I was there for Babs last year, and then Sheedy as well. And there's a big difference between both, to say the least. I remember the very first trains, we got a text. We were told we were meeting on whatever the Friday. So there was no meetings beforehand. It was just, right, first training session is whatever day, Tuesday night or whatever. And we got a text maybe a week before that to send on our sizes. Now, anyone involved with county teams, you know, you're training for a couple of weeks, then you give your sizes what for your gear, and then you get it maybe the training session before championship. But we text back the sizes, and the very first night we arrived, all our gear was there waiting for us. And straight away, that was a shock to the system. Like, geez, usually we'd wait about do 5 months training and get this. But it was there, and it just showed a different type of professionalism. And also, we had switched from, we were still training in Dr. Morris Park, but we'd switched down our dressing rooms down to Semple Stadium. So everyone had their own little section. And it was just, the professionalism just went up tenfold straight away. And then I think players reacted to that. I suppose there's a fine line there. Sometimes lads can be treated too well, you know, and the kind of softness sets in. But that definitely didn't happen with Sheedy, because you had Mick Ryan there, you had Eamonn O'Shea, and like, if the standards dropped from anyone at all, one of the three would call you up on it. They were very good at that, and you respect them for that. Some managers might pull you up and you'd be thinking, geez, what the hell is he on about? But any of them pull you up and straight away think, right, they're doing that for a reason. I have to look at myself.
But once you bring in that level of professionalism, it cuts out the excuses for the players.
Yeah,
you can no longer be looking at what Kilkenny or Cork were doing.
There was no excuse, and everyone was held accountable. I remember we were training one Saturday morning at maybe 7 or 8 o'clock we were training, but one lad showed up late. I won't name him, but his brother does... the hurling show on Thursday.
Don't say it was Paddy.
he showed up late one morning. I don't know, the alarm go off, but he had to apologise to everyone.
Right.
The entire squad. And straight away, even something as simple as that showed that, right, this is the standard. Excuses aren't accepted. And look, you see what he did. His initial. Time with Tip just brought professionality, brought a buzz around the county, raised the standard of hurling. And then I knew when he came back this time round, I said, right, they're going to make an impact this year. Everyone was saying there during the league, oh yeah, but they haven't found a panel, they're still relying on the older heads. And I said, no, do you know what? They'll be there. I don't know if they'll win it, but they'll be there, thereabouts. No disrespect, but I tipped at the very start here before there was a ball poked. I tipped Tip and Limerick for a final. Now, as it turns out, I was 1 point off of Limerick getting to the final. But I with Sheedy back, I just saw that he would bring that. And there was an article there a couple of weeks ago of the backroom team that he's brought with him, and I think there's something like 20 people on it or something. Yeah. You know, and that just shows the professionality that he brings and the standard that he sets, and everyone is reacting to it. And you see there in the semi-final, they got over it.
We want to talk about what's going to happen tomorrow and go through some of the various matchups that are going to be there as well. 53106 is the text number. Joined in the studio by Ryan O'Dwyer, by Taggy Fogarty, and by Dahi Regan. Do get in touch if you're listening on offtheball.com. You can get in touch on our social channels as well. But we'll take a very quick break.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
We were letting you off lightly, Ryan. We were chatting to Dahi about missing out in 98. You won a league with Sheedy in 2008?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you missed out in 2010?
Yeah, I wasn't part of the panel at the start of the year. I was actually playing football under John Evans. And then after,
why did you switch to the football?
Because I went to Boston in 09 and there was no call coming from Sheedy. So at the start of the year, John Evans rang me. So I joined the football because I wasn't getting a look in at the hurling. And then Tip got bet fairly handy by Cork in the Munster quarter final, and I got a call a couple of days later to come in and join the panel. So I did, went in, myself and Pat Burke, I think, went in and trained away. Before I got a call, and I'd already made plans to go back out to Boston because I was starting work the following September. So I said, I mightn't get to do this again. So trained with him. It was grand. They were playing Wexford in the championship, and I was part of the panel for that, or in the qualifier, I was part of the panel for that. But like I said, I'd already made plans to go back out to Boston. So I rang Sheedy and told him, and rang John Evans, told him. And
how'd that conversation go?
It was grand. I said, look, wish you best luck, whatever.
And was no part of you thinking, I'm going to miss out on something here?
Probably at the time, I was probably being selfish at the time. And just thinking, no, I want to go out. I had such a good summer in 09. I said, no, I'll have a great summer again. So it's probably the lads in Boston, their fault, because they gave me a good summer. But so I went back out anyway. And little did I know that a couple of months later, I'd be actually on Hill 16 looking at Tip doing the lap of honour after the game.
Didn't
looking,
even get a stand ticket right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Looking down saying, oh, far. But I don't.
Like Dahi, were you able to park it?
Yeah, I've parked it. Look, as far as I'm concerned, if I stayed, I might not have come to Dublin. I might not have played with Dublin. And I've made friends and plenty of enemies. But I've made friends up here that I might not have met those people if I'd have stayed in Tip. But I mailed to park it like Dahi in 98. But I suppose we were saying off air, probably the thing that sticks with me is 2013, more so than 2010.
The red card.
Yeah, but you have to live and get on with it.
Let's talk about tomorrow's final then. Dahi, you've covered this Kilkenny team, this great Kilkenny team over the last 13, 14 years. Where do you rate this achievement of Cody getting this group to the final? A group without a Tommy Walsh, JJ Delaney, Jackie Tyrrell, Henry Shefflin, Eddie Breden, Taggy Fogarty, Owen Larkin, Richie Power. Is this on a par with anything he's done before? Are we underestimating this current group?
I think there's different eras. I think from an achievement point of view, I think it's an extraordinary achievement. It's interesting, and we spoke about this before, when he broke up and a lot of the great players left. I mean, at the time when Kilkenny were playing, I always felt the difference between themselves and Tip were probably three or four of the greatest players of all time played in the one team, probably Tommy, JJ, Henry. And then after that, you just had exceptional players
don't
as well.
Don't forget me.
So you factor in three of the greats of all time into a team. Then the culture and Cody and everybody else and their abilities. Like, to me, it was no wonder that the achievements were the achievements. What was very interesting for me was where it would go when that team started to fragment, as great teams do, the Kerry team in the late 70s, early 80s. So when Kilkenny started to fragment, I can remember one night being asked by, I think it was Joe, who's the bigger loss, like JJ or Henry or Tommy? And I said, listen, the key isn't those guys. They're actually gone. The most important person to stay for me was Brian Cody. And the reason he was because with the breakup of this team, you were going to have new guys coming onto the panel. But for me, the one that gelled the whole thing together was Cody, from the point of view, the culture. He embedded this culture. And Taggy knows all about it, and he can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I think I might have a point to an extent in that. Everyone that came into the Kilkenny squad very quickly learned about the culture of what it meant to be a Kilkenny player, the respect, the honesty and the integrity to wear a Kilkenny jersey and what it meant, and the demands on you as a person, as a human and as a player. Your responsibilities to the rest of the lads was something that you wouldn't have experienced with any other team or coach before. So I felt that Cody was the most important person on that basis, that every young fella coming in who has been a, you know, coming onto the panel, I didn't think they'd win All-Irelands, but I thought that they'd get to the level of a supreme person, athlete, hurler, because of the man that was going to be there. And I think if he wasn't there and if he had left, I would question whether anybody else could have got them to an All-Ireland final as quick as. That's why I think it's an extraordinary achievement to have them back, because I certainly didn't think Kilkenny would win an All-Ireland title, and maybe they won't, but even be in an All-Ireland final. I thought they were below the top three or four, but for him to get them back to an All-Ireland final, I think is an extraordinary achievement.
Yeah, I think the culture, in no matter what the setup, I think the culture is so important. But like, added to that, in Kilkenny, you have the history. You have the, like, you go down after a match, you go down to the pub to have a drink. Everyone there knows you. Like, you go out in Dublin, no one knows you. Do you know, whereas you have to be held accountable to every one of those people. And just the weight of that in your back drives lads on. You're on about there, lads coming in, and the constant person there is Cody. But it's the culture and the standards that the players set for each other. And you said it, Cody would do his talking on the Friday night and then let the players. And it's that they're holding themselves accountable. And the one thing I know, I really noticed about Kilkenny is, and this is unlike any other team, like, you've a lad coming out a minor, and every other county, they're put into the seniors, and they're brilliant, they're the future. But you look at the players that have come on to Kilkenny that are now unbelievable players but struggled to make the team at the start, like Mick Fenley struggled to make the team at the start. TJ Reid.
Richie Hogan.
Like, they were all on and off it at the start until they fully bought into the culture, everything else was just cast aside, and this is what matters. This is the most important thing. And I find it so fascinating that, like, this lad, that he's 19 or 20, every other team he'd walk onto it. He'd be the main target man, he'd be the main whatever. But that's not the case in Kilkenny. Yeah. You do your apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And I think that's Brian Cody's greatest legacy, is that's exactly what he's done in Kilkenny. He's won on Ireland's with great teams, good teams, mediocre teams. He's won All-Ireland, but what he's done for Kilkenny, he's built that culture from a young age. Brian Cody, he trained an under-12 team in the village. He just loves hurling. And when we were winning, he'd bring us down a level, as in, he doesn't care about your All-Stars, don't care about your All-Ireland medals. It's about what you do for Kilkenny. It's all about Kilkenny and what's been done with it. And he'd make sure, well, he wouldn't make sure, but we'd feel it upon ourselves that we visit the schools with the cup afterwards, you know, all through that week. We'd be celebrating, but we'd be holding ourselves in the right circumstances, in the right areas around Kilkenny as well, you know. And I think the guys coming through then would see the way that Kilkenny tradition is, and you have to be, how honest you have to be. Like, TJ Reid came in, he can make the ball sing, he can score points from every angle. Brian Cody didn't actually want that. He wanted him to graft. He wanted him to work hard. And that's why TJ didn't make the team for 3 or 4 years. He came on the Ireland final 2008, scored 5 points from play, but still didn't make the team probably till 2009.
Cody wants his forwards making life difficult for the opposition.
And
defenders,
that's probably where I,
when they have the ball.
Exactly. That's probably where I came on the scene, because I was a worker. I was a corner forward and I was a worker. And that's what Cody really liked. You know, he would have said, like, hooking and blocking, putting your body on the line.
It's worth a point, like.
It's absolutely. And it's like, if you do that work, the scores will come from that, the breaks will come from it, and then the game will just open up. And I think that's the difference between the Kilkenny forwards maybe and the Tip forwards, is that the Kilkenny forwards are battle hardened, they're really honest, and they're really just in for that intensity, and the Tip forwards are more kind of a flow between them.
If you want to look at an analogy, look at Man United, look at the culture that prevailed when Ferguson was there, and look what's happened when he's gone. I'm not suggesting for a second that it happened in Kilkenny. It's kind of a different dynamic in many respects, but it reverts back to the man at the top and the culture and the aura that he's held in, that no matter who comes in, some younger players coming through, you know, the fact that Cody's there, they'd hear about him, they would have heard about him, but they'll never get to experience. So whoever comes in after him, it's an absolutely critical appointment, whoever comes in after him, because look what happened with United by not the right people coming in, and you can lose it very quickly.
And you talk about the culture, and what is the GAA, what is the culture? It's the clubs, and Brian Cody has 100% for the clubs, always let it back to the clubs before matches. 3 weeks out from All-Ireland, we could be playing a championship match with our club, you could be 3 or 4 weeks
it's
out
there,
and he would allow lads to go back to the club, and it's so important for him to go back, and he would talk about it, and he talk about performing for your club, because some lads, they play for Kilkenny, they might saunter back to the club and go, look, that's right, I'm playing for Kilkenny, I'm the big dog, you know, I don't have to perform here. But if you weren't performing in the club, Brian would be at the match, or he'd have someone at the match to be looking, and he'd pick you up on it, like, you know. So it's so important to go back to your club.
And also the players and play take well. Ownership of that culture.
Absolutely.
As well. And like, I always think of a story Tommy Walsh was saying of his last year with Kilkenny when he wasn't getting selected, one of the greatest hurlers of all time, and how he felt he owed it to the county to hang around and go back and be in training, and for the young forward to have to take on Tommy Walsh and everything he'd learned, even though he sort of knew in the back of his mind, no matter how well he did in training, Cody wasn't putting him back in the starting 15. And the easy thing is to relax on the 9 All-Ireland medals and to put the feet up and to go on the media circuit, but actually to just go out and slog away in training, just to sort of teach the young lads a lesson.
Exactly, and that's the message, because when you're in the thick of it, when you're young, and Brian Cody is saying, if you play well in training, you'll get your place. And you will, when you're on the younger scale of it. Like, I found out when I was on the older scale of it, I was flying in training, but still wasn't getting my game as it would have been maybe when I was younger. But I believed in it, as in, when I was a young fella coming in, I believed in it. And if I was going around with my hands swinging, and if I wasn't, you know, didn't care, and sulking and bitter, people would see that. And I would have walked away from the panel being bitter at the end of it, you know, and I didn't want that. And as Tommy said, and Henry, look, didn't get picked either, but it was just, that was the way it was done. And for us to finish up being bitter and not being shown the culture to the younger fellas wouldn't have been right.
A lot of the build-up for tomorrow has been focused around TJ Reid and Seamus Callanan, the two outstanding forwards of this current generation. We might talk about how you stop them, and Matthew O'Hanlon is one of those who has done very well against TJ Reid this season. He was in studio earlier in the week and he was talking about how you try and man-mark TJ Reid.
Like, the way I approach it is that if they don't have the ball in their hand, they can't do any damage. So the first thing is to try to stop him winning primary possession. But he's one of the best guys in terms of catching a high ball. And you'll see him, he fakes in front and then comes around to the back and tries attack from behind. And then when you're a back and you don't know where the forward is behind you, that's really, really hard to, because if you go up here, he can come in on top of you and try
to catch. So how do you counter that?
You try, don't let him get behind you, you start further back and then make sure the ball and hit your ball and the man is in front of you so you can see everything when you're attacking it. That's the way I approach it. But then he's very smart in his movement and he moves at the right time. You'll see him make sprinting runs off the shoulder and getting the ball off the shoulder, and sometimes you just can't do anything about those. There's so many bodies in the way that his angle of running is designed to get directly in on goal and then block your run. You'll see it. That's how he often gets a lot of his goals, just by following in on a break, making a smart run, and then you're caught behind the bodies where the ball is broken from. So it's not easy to mark him.
So there's many different ways there that essentially mean whoever's marking him cannot switch off for a split second.
Oh, no, if you're marking him, that's your sole role, that's your sole focus. You can't worry about, you know, the ball and you scoring points or anything like that.
And does he take a break at any stage? Like, do you see moments where actually he needs to regain his composure? He just switches off for a couple of minutes and revs himself up?
I suppose, I think there's periods in a game where players do that, depending on what's happened to play before. Like, if you made, you know, a 40, 50 yard sprint or whatever, you're out of breath, you're going to be out of the game for a couple of minutes before you've got the energy back to do that. So there will be those spells.
Dahi, I know you were very impressed with the job Matthew O'Hanlon did on TJ Reid in the Leinster final. Does Liam Sheedy put a man marker on him? And if he does, is it Brendan Maher? Is it Padraig Maher?
Well, I don't think Paddy Maher is a man marker.
No.
I think Paddy likes to play his own game. Yeah. He likes to go into a loose ball. He likes to be there for the hand pass. And he's a big player. He's too big of a player, I think, for Tipperary.
Yeah, to tie
going
up.
Forward. You know, he wins high ball, he gets Tip going, and if he's out of the game, you know, what's going to get it, what'll get him going? And yeah. Brendan Maher all season has been man-marking, really.
Yeah, I think so as well. I was actually surprised that he, in the semi-final with Wexford, that he actually went back on Ford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He went back in left corner back, and Callanan was in full at that stage, and Bubbles was right half forward. And I was looking at it, think, geez, you know, Ford is good, but I thought, you know, are you wasting Matthew O'Hanlon back there, left corner back? But I have to give it to Davey all year. There was very little he got wrong, if anything, to be honest with you, and they just came up short. He got that one right as well. He was brilliant, considering he picked up such a bad injury early on in the game. I mean, like, TJ Reid is, like, he's the catalyst for so much. When, like last year in particular, I thought he was incredible. Yeah. When he didn't have a great Kilkenny forward line around him, he really didn't. Kilkenny's forward line is much improved this year. I think it's huge for Wally. I really do. I think he needs to have a massive game. You go back to the 2014 All-Ireland final. Richie Hogan popped 6 points from play that day. Mm. Kilkenny hit 3 goals. But when they got ahead with 6-7 minutes to go and it was 3 points ahead the whole time, all it needed the other end was one break of a ball, and you had Noel Maher, you had Bubbles, you had Callanan coming onto the ball, and they have ability to come on, pick it in the hand one step, and whether it's 70 yards, 40 yards, 80 yards, their accuracy is unerring. And Kilkenny, 3 points was never enough, even with time running out. Just, I always felt in that game in particular, Kilkenny needed more than just a break and someone to come onto it. They had Richie who hit six. Now, Richie's not the hurler he was. You can't do it 26 what you did at 20. You can't do it 30 what you did at 26, and so on and so forth. So that would be my concern, is that, you know, TJ again is going to have nearly a man of the match performance.
Yeah.
For Kilkenny. You get the feeling that he will. Yeah. But enough was shown the last day with Wexford, with the smarts that they applied to it, that as good as Tip are ball players, if you get amongst them, and who better, with the manic intensity that Kilkenny went at Limerick, you know, knew all along what was coming, and they still couldn't handle it.
And that's probably the key, though. Like, yeah. Like, Kilkenny are going to have to bring this to a dogfight. They're going to have to keep it tight, and they're going to have to play the first 20 minutes against Limerick, they're going to have to play for 70 minutes against Tipperary. Because Tipperary will have the experience. Like, I felt Limerick were knocked, you know, got into their heads a bit, and they drove wides that they shouldn't have drove. That won't happen to Tipperary, because they'll have, you know, they have the tradition and have the belief in themselves that, right, Kilkenny are on top, but we're going to come, and they have the belief in themselves to win it. So you're talking about Seamus Cannon, Hugh Lawler matchups, you know. I think a big one for me is Conor Brown's going to have to man-mark Noel McGrath midfield. Conor Brown is a very good hurler, he's an athlete, and he's very strong, and he doesn't care about the ball, and Brian Crowley's told him that, so he's just going to mark Noel McGrath. And when it gets tight and intense, Noel McGrath's take off in the Munster final, you know, which is a huge coup. Like, he's in for hurler of the year probably if he plays well. What hurler of the year has been taken off in the Munster final, yeah. I can't remember. But, and then on the flip side of it, the two full forwards, Colin Fennelly as well, you know, in full forward, I think he's playing brilliant stuff, and he has more of a direct role. Cody had him out before, wing forward, corner forward. You have to work hard, you have to get on the ball. Now he's just edge of the square kind of thing. But to talk about the big names, but the way they're going to play, for me, Walter Walsh, you mentioned already, Dahi, and John Donnelly, the way Kilkenny are going to play, they're going to hold their back six, the half back line. So them two boys are going to have to pull back right up, and it's what they're going to do in the middle third, this famous middle third, that's where the ball is going to be won. That's key. So it's the lesser, I won't say the lesser hurlers, but maybe the hurlers that maybe are not being talked about as much. And on the flip side of that, O'Mara and Dan McCormick for Tip, they want to do the same thing as well, because the Tip halfback line want to stay put, and they're going to have to pull out the field. So it's really about the battle, and not letting, if it opens up, Tip forwards can make the ball sink. They're probably more free flowing as a unit together. The Kilkenny forwards, I feel, are more battle hardened. They're bringing more of an intensity to it, and they have to stop the supply to the full forward line. 221 they scored against Kilkenny in that 2016 All-Ireland. That cannot happen. And like, I'll talk to JJ about it, the perfect ball in, you can't defend against that. So it's to stop the supply from out the field. And that's what both teams are going to want to do. It's going to be a traditional game, but there's going to be a load of tactics in it.
Yeah, I think a main thing here is, I think if Tip can keep the shape of the six backs, and make space in the forwards, so that we'll say the half forwards pull out and make space and free flowing, I think Tip will win. But if Kilkenny play with the intensity that they played against Limerick, and like they played with massive intensity, and it was just unbelievable to see. but they still only won by a pint. Do you know, and Limerick put a lot of wides, dropped a lot of ball in short when there was only one ball in and three Kilkenny lads against one Limerick man. Like, if they can do, if Tip can pull their the Kilkenny half back line out, I think, yeah, they can win. But if they can, if Kilkenny can keep it tight and play with massive intensity that they did against Limerick, it's going to be very hard to count Kilkenny out.
But if you take it that it's an All-Ireland final and Kilkenny come with that intensity in the first 15-20 minutes, what do Tipperary do? What to make sure that actually they can play their own game?
Well, you see, they know it's coming. The two lads have hit on it, and the whole key is what the two lads after hitting on it. If you go back to the experience of 2016, where Seamus Callanan was left with oceans of space, right, and it killed him. Yeah. Okay, Kilkenny have been posed this question and puzzle going back to Galway in 2012, where they played two men inside, and I can't remember who was left corner forward for Galway. They brought him out, Damien Hayes, brought him way out to field, and he fed off his own half back line. He was moving every time they got it, and they played Davy Burke and Joe Canning inside. And in the All-Ireland final that year, you had the extraordinary vista at the start of the game where the Kilkenny players lined up for the national anthem. And when it broke, the Galway forwards were gone. And every one of the Kilkenny players had a player picked, okay? Yeah. So it didn't matter what Galway player or what position. If Tommy ended back up fullback, Tommy was fullback. And that didn't work for Kilkenny. And Kilkenny struggled that day. Okay, got the draw and won it. So in the Leinster final that year, after 18 minutes, Richie Hogan was pulled out of corner forward to kind of counter. And it's the first time I ever questioned Brian Cody tactically. When someone posed him a really, really kind of tactical puzzle, like Galway did, Kilkenny struggled with it. But that goes back to the 80s. Galway could tactically... Yeah. Pose questions to Kilkenny, 86 semi-final springs to mind. So Kilkenny know all of this and he's been posed these questions. So for me, it's the discipline of Kilkenny's half-back line not to be sucked out the field.
Yeah.
And they won't be sucked out the field because Donnelly and Walter Walsh, you nailed the head on the head, Taggy. They are going to come back in and they're going to condense it and they're going to fight like tigers for everything that's there. So it brings it back to the question. They want to keep their shape because they don't want to leave this free-flowing tip forward line in space. So this manic intensity is coming. Limerick knew it was coming because it was spoke about and it was all up there in the air. This thing is coming at us, okay? And then John Kiely was on the sideline and it was 15-15, the ball was thrown in. And this thing that they knew was coming hit them and they didn't know what it was.
They weren't really ready.
They weren't ready.
They were ready, no, but they weren't really ready.
They were ready, yeah. But they weren't ready. So the question you're saying is, Tip know it's coming. You know, how do they deal with it? But it depends with the ferocity. If it's brought with the same ferocity, as it will be, that Limerick brought, nothing prepares you. So Tip train down there and they play eight defenders against their forward line and their sub-defenders are told, hit like mad. And the forwards are told, this is what you're going to get. It'll be nothing compared. But that in itself isn't enough to win it. But it's a long way to getting them into the position and giving them the platform to do it. So it's a strategy of different styles. And I would agree in that if Tip do get the free flowing, they'll win it. But I suspect and I believe enough, even though I didn't after the two semi-finals, I thought Tip. But the more I look at it, I think this man is just extraordinary. He's an extraordinary man and they play in the mould of him and the manner of him. And I can actually see them, even though I think Tip's forward line are a better moving one, I can see Kilkenny win it.
I can see him holding the intensity for 60, 70 minutes. I really can. And that's what didn't happen in 2016. And there's a few factors into that. There's the Brian Cody factor, the ultimate motivator to get the best out of these guys. We've been underdogs kind of all year long, you know, even in our own county. Of course, he wants them to win. Have to hand me hand up, I didn't think to be in an All-Ireland final. That gets into a team, especially with Brian Cody. Like, when everyone's against them, that's when he thrives on it. And I think this team, they've just got a really good spirit in them now. I think after the Leinster final, Cody probably sat down with himself, first of all, and said, there's more in this team, there's more in it. And I think he has a full panel of players to play, pick from now, which he hadn't had for the last two or three years. It's always injuries. Mm. He was trying to find a team to play together, and there's more consistency in the team now rather than switching and swapping. And when his team is playing consistently, I think they tend to play better because they know how to feel of other players, how they actually play. So I think, on that point of view, they're coming at the right time. They've got a good performance in Cork, and they put their own pattern on the game as well. But they have to bring it that intensity, and you know that's what Brian thrives on.
Is Colin Fennelly plan A or is he plan B? Are you putting high balls in at him in the first 10 minutes, ask a few questions of that tip fullback line, or do you wait and see how the rest of the forwards are developing?
Yeah, the first 10 minutes, 50 minutes, it's going to be frantic anyway. So, like, you can talk about tactics all you want, but it could all go out the window. I remember 2011, the Tipperary forwards all lined up just in a bunch, all together in the middle, in their own, past their own 40, and Kilkenny's were all in the bunch. Next thing, the whistle blew, and lads just went everywhere. Because we had a man-marking strategy that day. We were going to man-mark everyone. Jack Tier was man-marking Lair. Tommy was on whoever it was, Bonner at the time, whatever the case. So we're man-marking, but Kilkenny now are doing a zonal kind of marking, back to the zonal thing again. So Conlon Fennelly, I think, is huge for Kilkenny. He's coming as well at the right time. And it's kind of like Kennelly. You get the right ball into Conlon Fennelly, he's a battling ram. He'll win a penalty, he'll win a free. You know, if he had a first touch, the man would be the best hurler in Ireland. He's just so big and strong, he can get back to it. So he's definitely plan B, and the fact that Brian Cody has told him to stay in on the square, they're going a large ball, and Kilkenny mix it. They play it short, but they love that long ball because they have the ball winners. You know, you talk about Kilkenny didn't do tactics in our day. Of course we did tactics, but the tactic was hit the long ball in because you had catchers of Shefflin, Goethe, Richie Power, phenomenal men in the air. So that
wouldn't
was
say it back then, though, would you? No, there was any tactics.
People were looking too much into it. Of course it's a tactic. It's a tactic when you say, here's who we're putting full forward. Yeah. Get the ball as quick as you can, down as long as you can, two corner forward, stay out and come in at speed. That's a tactic.
Playing six forwards is a tactic.
But people in hurling now think
it's just traditional tactics, maybe.
That it's either four men behind the ball and the whole thing, and it just gets overanalyzed.
Complicating a simple game.
Correct.
Like, you know,
totally.
You keep it as simple as you can. Yeah. Like, it's a lot easier to score from 20 yards out than 80 yards out, so get the ball in there.
And the cliche, like, the cliche is, right, you can have all these tactics and all these plans, but if you don't have the ball, if you're getting hit left, right and centre every second, you're just getting that ball and you're hitting. And then Croke Park on our Ireland final day, it's a different ball game altogether.
Yeah, like it's a big pitch, but
and the crowd,
when the intensity is there, and it becomes very small.
It's draining. Like, I remember the first 5-10 minutes of the Ireland finals, and I'm going, my tongue was hanging out going, how am I going to get through this? Like, just the intensity. In 2009, I never heard a roar in my life in 2009 on Ireland, typical Kenny. That was the first time we kind of met in Ireland.
Yeah.
So it's just mental stuff, and it's kind of drizzly rain, and there's just a cauldron, like, and you can get caught up in that and forget, and the game can pass you by.
Best of the whole lot, I think that was that one. Yeah. Best I ever seen, best All-Ireland I've ever seen was 09. I'll never forget it. It was, and I always remember coming in the premium stand afterwards, and there was two guys, you know, like guys you see at a match in their 70s, late 70s, early 80s, with the paddy caps and the Mac over the arm. And the two of them were in the premium stand after the game, leaning, looking out the window. And I was really fixated with these two guys, the type of guys that were going to Munster finals and Leinster finals back in the 40s and 50s. And I was looking at them thinking, what did you make of that? You know, it was an extraordinary final, and it was like they were, you see the joy in their face. I don't know what county they were from, but there were great ones since and great ones before, but that's the best one I ever seen.
Yeah. On Tipperary then, and Kilkenny's intensity coming in the first 20 minutes and the ferocity of the hits. Like that half back line of Brendan Maher, Porkmar, Seamus Kennedy, they don't mind how hard you hit them. They're three of the toughest men in the game. And then the full forward line of Ford, Calnan, McGrath are as lethal a full forward line as you're going to get. Like, are we underestimating Tipperary still?
No,
a team that were 5 points down in All Ireland semi-final.
I don't think anyone's underestimating Tip. Like, Tip have the potential to win this by 5, 6, 7 points.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If it opens up.
Like, if it opens up, if it's a free flowing game, I think Tip will win and could win pulling away. But if there is the intensity there, the hitting, the pulling, the dragging, the whatever. I the more it is like that, I think the bigger chance it is of Kilkenny pulling it off.
We have a lot of texts coming in on 53106. Question for you, Taggy. Who was the toughest player to have marking you? JJ, Tommy or Pody up Kilkenny, up the Emeralds? So Pat in Urlingford. Do you know Pat?
Pat. Could be Pat Ryan, maybe, yeah. Yeah. He actually togged out in the 91 at Ireland.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for Kilkenny, yeah, Pat Ryan. But Tommy J, well, see, Tommy was the type of hurler that he loved being on the ball himself, and he was flamboyant, and he just loved hurling, like, you know, and he was brilliant in the air. JJ was more kind of a defender. He didn't care about the ball. He'd hold you, he'd pull you, he'd flick your hand. You know, he was just terrible to mark. So I'd probably go for JJ, because Tommy would wander off looking for the ball, and you could sneak into the corner maybe and get one on him and put one over the bar. JJ was just so tight. And
JJ's great talking about that art of defending, of not caring about anything else except just winning the ball
defender,
ahead of your man.
Yeah, if you're talking about defender, JJ was the best at the art of actually defending. Yeah. The flicks, the hooks, the blocks. And the thing with JJ, he's caught for pace. You could be running at 98% and JJ would be into you. He could go up to 100% and JJ keep into you. He was exceptionally fast, but he ran at his own pace to keep into you. Like, but As a defending qualities, JJ was probably the best, I thought.
Would he hit you as hard in training as he'd be hitting players out on the pitch?
He's filthy, absolutely filthy. Yeah, and catching them balls in the air.
That's exactly foul, like Cody wanted.
Foul every time, yeah. You know. But in training, JJ would absolutely foul it. But if you tug the little jersey, free out. You know, and you know, that's what Cody did. But if you took the head off a fella, no bother.
Cahill and Kilcormac. Another Offaly man in the middle of tipping Kilkenny men. Watch out, Doughty, for any flying hurls that might strike you in the face.
Yeah, that's great to be here, to be honest, and great to be alive, and thanks be to God to get up and see them. I mean, we're looking at greats nowadays. I felt sorry for you guys, Dublin, when, you know, you came so close, and I, on a personal basis, a great time for your hurling. I think you brought a huge amount to Dublin, a toughness and ball-winning ability, the whole thing. I'd love to see Dublin back up at those levels again. They brought something that was really good. There was a great tactical nous to what Dublin were doing then as well, and I think this man was nearly the catalyst for getting them over when he joined with them, because it had raw meanness, and I mean that in the best sense, that maybe they had been lacking before that, you know.
Dirty but,
there was well,
yeah,
well,
that's not a way to say it.
Well, you need it, Ella.
Every team,
you just get caught too often. Yeah. That was the problem, right?
Yeah, that was your problem. Yeah. Yeah.
All the best to Doughty and the 94 Offaly team. That team gave the greatest display I've ever seen in the 95 Leinster final against Kilkenny in a monsoon. The Offaly team of the 90s danced every dance and won or lost with great heart, skill and charisma, often to the cost of my own county, says Sean Maher in Wexford.
Yeah, we had great battles with Wexford. Yeah, we had a great time. Like I say, Michael Dignan always said, if we'd had the ruthlessness of Kilkenny, maybe he'd win more. But people look back on their careers with the teams they were in different ways. I think we are fondly remembered by other counties, and I think that's probably good enough for us, in that we'll go up tomorrow and it'll be a mad session tomorrow night, and it'll probably go on, it's my boss listening, probably go on for a couple of days afterwards, you know, like it used to before, but that, you know, yeah, great memories, great friends, and so we all live cheek by jowl down there still in the slagging and all of this type of thing. There were great days, but we played against great sides, great respect for the lads. We played against Wexford and Kilkenny, huge respect in particular for Kilkenny. We earned the respect of Kilkenny back the years. They would be a very favoured team of Offaly.
Right.
Kilkenny would be massively. Because we earned their respect. We were the minnows who didn't win anything for 100 years. Mm-hmm. And we met our breakthrough against Kilkenny in 1980, beating them by a point. You know, we beat them in the 98 final, that 95 Leinster final. We had some great battles with them, but what we loved about Kilkenny, they had great respect for us. We would say up our way that Tip probably wouldn't have had the same respect for us. But Kilkenny were on the receiving end of a lot of hidings from us over a 10-year period. So they came up against our type of hurling firsthand. Tip and us never came up head-to-head against one another. One league semi-final back in 91, which we won. But Kilkenny respected us. And to this day, Kilkenny respect what we did back then. Yeah. And we've never forgotten that. We have huge respect for Kilkenny because as the best up there, they always treated us with the height of respect and stuff like that you don't forget.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anthony and Kilkenny wondering, what was the better team, Taggy? Cork 06 or Tip 09?
Oh, two can't trust in sides, really. You know, I think Tipperary 09, I think they were probably the better team than Cork. Cork had a certain style. They had a kind of working through the lines, possibly kind of towards the Cork team now. They were a nice team, but they had very good hurlers on them as well. You know, they got the half back line of Gardner, Ronan Curran, you know, serious hurlers. Mm. But the Tip team, I think, brought an intensity to it, a kind of an anger to it. And, you know, I suppose I'm on the border there as well. So there's a bit more tense playing Tipperary than Cork. So it does count.
Harry and Ballycahill wondering about the Tip backroom team, which you mentioned earlier. Tommy Dunn, very much a part of that. Ryan, what was he like in the changing room before a game?
Tommy? Mm. Well, I only experienced Tommy when he was involved with Dublin. He came in, did one or two training sessions in 12, I think, and then was part of it in 2013, and brought an intensity and an honesty to it. Like, if we were doing a drill, if you missed your first touch, you didn't get a sec. Like, if we were doing a point scoring drill, so the lad hitting the ball out to you, but you missed your first touch, you didn't get to take a shot. Do you know, and that raised the standards without saying straight out, right, you need to be hurling better, and like that. He raised the standards. And I remember there was one training, we were training out in Castleknock one Saturday, and we were doing a kind of playing a backs against forwards kind of drill. And I got the ball, and I thinking back, and it was nearly like I was playing football. Do you know, in football, you can get the ball, you can stand, you can look around. And I was nearly doing that with when I got the ball in the hurling, I kind of looked around, and the lad facing me, and Tommy just called the hall to it. He said, "What the are you doing?" He said, "You need to go, you need to go. You can't just stand up, you're making it easy for him." And I think that, for me anyway, in 2013, that was a turning point for me. But he raises the standards. And anyone, I suppose, anyone around my age that was growing up in Tip, Tommy was just a god. He was an absolute god. He was like, he was captain of Tip for so long. He got man the match in the 0-1 final.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And I think, like, he made his championship debut in 93, I think, and he kept the standard up so high.
When Tip weren't at the top.
When Tip weren't as good at the time. And then even when Owen Kelly came on, it was Tommy Dunn and Owen Kelly. Yeah. You know, Tommy just stayed there at the top level for so long. And, you know, and he kept the, when from a management point of view, he just keeps the standard high, that you have to go up and meet, he doesn't drop it down. And I think that's what he adds to the Tip backroom team, anyway.
Standards are so important.
Yeah.
Kieran in Tipperary says, "Lads, for a change, not overly confident at the moment, but tomorrow morning the real Tipperary man will appear with swagger. I looked again at the first half against Wexford and was horrified at the space some Wexford players got, notably O'Keefe. If that happens tomorrow, Kilkenny will have it won by half time. Ask the guys their thoughts." Kieran in Barris O'Kane, not too far from Offaly, and loves listening to Dahi Regan's analysis.
Yeah, like we spoke about that the other night. It'll be a different game. Kilkenny won't play like Wexford. I was at the Wexford game, and nothing surprises you with Davy now. And I said the other day, there's a cameo sticks out in my mind. Wexford overlapped, and O'Keefe actually got a point in the first half. And it was still another two players inside. Paddy Maher was back, and when the ball went over the bar, Hogan stepped out, and Paddy Maher turned around. And they turned around, not to any particular Tip defender, but they were like pleading, but they didn't plead to anybody specific. And it was like, what's going on? Where are they coming from? Where's the overlap coming from? Who's not picking up? And God, Wexford will rue that chance, because what a chance Wexford had the last day. But Kilkenny will play it a different way.
Right.
Kilkenny will play it tight, they'll keep their backs. It'll be different. They're not going to open Tip up. They'll fight demonically for everything up front and feed off scraps for a lot of the first half in particular.
We need to get predictions, lads, as we wrap up. Ryan?
I'm going to say Tip. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago or even last week, I'd have said Tip by 4. I don't think 4 now. I think it's going to be a tight one, and I think it's going to be a puck of a ball in at the end, but I'm going to say Tip just over the line.
Taggy?
Yeah, it's going to be it's a tight one. I think it can be caught up looking at the semi-finals. I think all through the year, Tip started off brilliantly. You know, maybe they played a Clare team, I felt, that really intent on beating themselves. A Cork team who could beat anyone but get bet by anyone. A poor Paddy Water team that went up during the year. Bet well in the Munster final against a Limerick team that really put it up to them. Got over Laois and beat a good Wexford team, but they kind of beat themselves in the end by retreating, and there's nearly the fear of winning that match. They retreated back. All credit to Tip. They're a man down, 5 points down, and still got over the line, so that'll do them mentally. That'll improve them. I think Kilkenny are just coming at the right time. I think they're getting their game plan right, and I think they have their settled team, and I think they're going to bring a ferocious and a ferocity to this game, because Brian Cody, I suppose the Liam Sheedy, Brian Cody factor from 2010, you know, Sheedy left, Cody would still want to get one up on him. You don't call a spade, it's sport.
It's 1-1.
You know, it's 1-1, exactly. One all. Yeah. And I think just the way Kilkenny are building, I'm going to back Kilkenny by about 2 points.
Yeah, Dahi, I guess if we are looking at semi-finals, we should acknowledge that for most of the season and the majority of the summer, we thought Limerick were the best team in the country. Yeah. And Kilkenny beat them.
Yeah, no, rightly so. And Limerick Tip would have been my tip at the start of the year as well. But see, I suppose one thing nobody is factoring in is how hard Kilkenny are going to be hit. I mean, Tip must be sick to their teeth listening to, this is going to be brought to you.
Yeah,
you might find tomorrow that Kilkenny are going to be hit with a ferocity that they've never seen before from Tip. Expect that from Sheedy. Yeah. He's going to be laying it into these fellas that, you know, you're going to be hit, you're going to be, what are we doing? Are we going out like and putting a white flag up on the agenda in front
that
of them?
That could be their driving force, actually. Yeah,
it'll be a massive driving force for them. And the thing about it is, when you go at that, does that in any way detract from your fluency? Because their forwards are going to look to upset the Kilkenny backs. So will that upset the fluency a small little bit? So there's all these balances and nuances. Ryan made a good point. If Tip win, there's nothing to say that on a good day, open up, they could win it by 6 or 7 and pulling away. That's not inconceivable. Mm. It really isn't. I don't see Kilkenny doing that.
And they have bet Kilkenny in Ireland the last 2 times by up to 7.
And in 16, they looked they were the far better side. But I think that was the breakup as well of Kilkenny, and Tip needed it because Tip had gone another few years without winning. The accusation they can't. There's a lot to suggest Tipperary, to be honest with you, but I just have a feeling it's going to be Kilkenny.
All right.
I think if Bonamair was playing, I would have no problem saying Tip.
Mm. It's amazing the factory he has, isn't it?
Yeah,
because
yeah. Great lad.
Like, I need to say forwards, when they get the ball, you nearly know what they're going to do with it. He could go on a solo run from 60 yards out, and you're afraid this could end up in the back of the goal.
It's unpredictable.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and that's what brings the element of surprise.
Just
a
maker anymore. Yeah, he was a scorer as well. Yeah. A great lad. Huge loss.
Lads, enjoy the game tomorrow, in particular you, Doughty. As you say, that Offaly 94 team is a real fondness in particularly the hurling public's heart, and I'm sure you'll get a good ovation when you're out on the pitch tomorrow.
Good stuff.
Enjoy the day. Thanks a lot, lads.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.